TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. A challenge to humanity. The situation in Palestine. This is a moving, urgent report from Palestine by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's a medical doctor and one of the leaders of the Palestinian movement that calls for an end to Israeli settlements in the West Bank and Gaza. His organization provides health and community services to more than 1 million people every year. Dr. Barghouti spoke in Berkeley, California, in March of 2004. He began his presentation by very calmly referring to dates in the history of the Palestinian people. Their expulsion from over 78% of their homeland when Israel was established in 1947. 700,000 Palestinians became refugees. And from 1947 to today, Israel keeps annexing more and more of the remaining 22% by military occupation and the building of illegal settlements on the Palestinian West Bank and Gaza. The Oslo Peace Accords, instead of reversing that process, actually sped up the land annexation. Since 1993, 102 new settlements were built on Palestinian land, and the existing ones expanded by 100%. How much more land will be taken? Dr. Barghouti begins by referring to the 750-kilometer-long wall that is being built now, cutting deep into Palestine, to guard a border that is only 200 kilometers long. Here is Dr. Mustafa Barghouti.
And then comes the last act, which is the building of the wall, the new Berlin Wall, as I call it, or the apartheid wall. This is not a wall about security, as it is claimed. This is a wall for other causes. The wall will be about 750 kilometers in length. It will be 8 meters high and three times as long and twice as high as Berlin Wall used to be. Trenches of barbed wire, snipers, and watchtowers will exist, and with automatic machine guns that shoot at any moving object that tries to get close to the wall. Is it for security? Well, let me tell you that the total length of borders between West Bank and Gaza Strip and Israel, the so-called Green Line, is not more than 200 kilometers. So why do we need 752 kilometers to guard borders that are only 200 kilometers? Because, of course, this wall is not about security. It's about land appropriation. And this map tells the story. These are the Palestinian communities that existed in 1967, and they are still the same. They didn't change because we were never allowed to build any other new community, to build Palestinian settlements on Palestinian land. No, of course, because Israel controls the land. What happened during the last 37 years is the creation of all these settlements, these blue spots. And then it became the security of settlements that is needed. That's why they created all these checkpoints, blocking Palestinians from using the roads and streets and allowing only Israeli settlements or settlers to use, Israeli settlers or army people to use the streets and roads. And then they created the wall. This is the first phase of the wall, and as you can see, it is not on the borders. It trenches down deep in the occupied territories, deep into the West Bank. The people here in Jenin, the communities here, are stuck between the wall from one side and the borders from the other side. That was the first phase, and now, which is finished already, and now they are building the second phase, which will enclave and destroy the lives of at least 202 communities, about one-third of the total number of communities in the area. affecting 752,000 people. I was watching a film recently, not Mel Gibson film, a very good film called The Pianist. It's a film about the suffering of Jewish people in Warsaw Ghetto during the Second World War. And of course, the suffering was immense and unacceptable. And of course, we sympathize with that, with the people who suffered there. But while I was watching that movie, I could not stop myself from thinking, my God, this is exactly what is being built now in Qalqilia. And this is the case of Qalqilia for you. A 46,000 people community surrounded by the wall from all directions, leaving only one entry, which is only 8 meters width, with a gate. And the gate has a key. And the soldiers keep the key. And they shut off the city every day at 6 p.m. Opening it again at 6 in the morning, or sometimes not opening it. They can keep it shut off for several weeks, as has happened in October. And this is happening not only to Qalqilia, but also to other communities. The same is being planned now for Tulkarem. The same is being planned for many other places. A village like Ras Tire here is now surrounded by the wall also from all directions. This is a small community who doesn't have a clinic. We didn't need to have a clinic there because people used to travel a few minutes from here to get to Ras Atiyah, where the clinic exists. But now these people cannot do this trip because it's shut off by this wall. Recently, a child there who was 2 years old got sick and he had fever. The family tried to take him to any clinic. They couldn't. For several hours, they struggled to find a way to get out. They couldn't. The child got convulsions. Eventually, he had severe brain damage. And by the time they finally got to a hospital, he was already in bad shape and he died. This is the first victim of this situation, but we will have many of these cases in the future if the situation continues. So what happened? First, we had the checkpoints. And imagine what happens to a patient who has to stop at every single one of these checkpoints. Imagine what happens, how much time it takes. Then came the wall, the first phase of the wall. Then came the gates. And then came the second phase of the wall. Cutting this same road so many times in so many places. And this is the end result. How could people live anymore with this situation? How could they receive education? How could they receive treatment? It is a process of destruction that is intentional, and that is the wisdom behind this wall. It is meant to destroy the social fabric of the Palestinian people. Berlin Wall used to cut Berlin into two pieces. This wall is cutting so many cities into two pieces. Jerusalem now, East Jerusalem, is two parts. The wall goes, sometimes separates the garden from the house, the same house. The wall is cutting Ramallah into two pieces. Bethlehem is already separated into two parts. The pilgrimage road between Jerusalem and Bethlehem does not exist anymore. Because of the wall. And of course, people respond. People are resilient. People are responsive. They try to survive. And they give us a lot of hope. The people who are so resilient, regardless of all these difficulties, are still there and will continue to be there. And Sharon is making the gravest possible mistake if he thinks that with his wall and oppression and checkpoints, he will force Palestinians to leave. No, they will not leave. People are resilient. And there are lots of people who give us hope too from the Israeli side. These wonderful young people who refused to serve in the Israeli army and who went to jail, they are now in jail, in Israeli jails, because they refused to be part of an occupying, oppressive army. These are the real heroes. And let me move from here to describing to you some of what I think are the basic factors in what's going on. I think that with this intifada, which was a reaction to Israeli activities, a reaction to the fact that Israel continued to build settlements, with this intifada, it became very clear that the whole Zionist project, if I might say so, the whole Israeli project is in crisis. Sharon is in crisis. He has promised that after 100 days in power, he will crush the intifada. He crushed nothing. Under his leadership, Israel is now facing the worst economic crisis in its history, with the collapse of tourism, with a loss of $24 billion, with 42% of the economic project facing the possibility of bankruptcy, with a situation where for the first time in the history of Israel, the number of those who leave Israel is larger than the number of those who come to Israel. 300,000 Israelis have already left during the last 3 years. We've been oppressed for 55 years. We had 700,000 people forced to leave the country. We had 67 war. We have this terrible occupation, which has become the longest in modern history, 37 years. And still, we have in West Bank, Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, and Israel itself, 4.8 million Palestinians, exactly the same number of Jewish Israelis living there. And I know they speak about the demographic crisis, but it is the doing of the Israeli government. 4.2% is the growth rate on the Palestinian side, not because we have so many children, which many families do, but also because we, the people, under occupation, under difficult circumstances, without Israeli permission, we managed to introduce modern concepts of primary health care to our rural areas, and we ourselves, without governments, reduced infant mortality rate from 150 per thousand to 20 per thousand. This is the power. The power of civil society that Sharon doesn't understand. And that number could be easily reduced over in 24 hours to 16 per thousand if we just remove all these checkpoints. Because 20% of children who die now in Palestine die because of the checkpoints. It is proven in a study that we have just finished at the Johns Hopkins University. This is what Sharon is doing on the ground. And we think he will not succeed because we're resilient. But to make him fail, we need clarity of vision. And this is exactly what I want to tell you about in my third part of my presentation. This is what the Palestinian National Initiative is about. This movement was created a year and a half ago with several goals, but the first of which is to try to present to Palestinians, to the world, to you, to everybody, a clear vision about what is happening, about a clear vision of what's going on. This is not a simple negotiation dispute. This is the struggle of people who are fighting for their freedom, for their independence, for their self-determination. Some Israelis find great difficulty accepting that, but whether they like it or not, the Palestinian struggle now for freedom is exactly like the struggle was of the Algerian people for independence and the South African struggle against apartheid. It's the same thing. And they cannot negate that. And by the way, I was in The Hague a couple of weeks ago, And it became very clear in The Hague that what we see is a turning point. The discussion of the case of the wall in The Hague resembled to a large extent the case of Namibia and South Africa in 1971. And this, like in that case, in this case also, it is triggering a process of sanctions maybe, or isolation of a policy that is wrong. Not only for the sake of Palestinians, but for the sake of Israelis. Because only when occupation ends, that Israelis themselves will be free. A people who oppress others cannot be free. And my second point, which is that, to my great sorrow, I have to convey to you that, unfortunately, the peace process is dead. It is dead because Sharon killed it more than once. It is dead because Sharon was allowed to continue his policy. It is dead because even when Palestinians managed, finally, with great difficulties, to achieve ceasefire 3 times, he undermined it and destroyed it with his assassination policy. And it is not the peace process that is the goal. You see many politicians worshipping the peace process as if it is the substitute to achieving peace. One should remember that the peace process is an instrument to achieve peace. And we want a peace process that is truly targeted at achieving peace, not to waste time or gain time to continue to build these settlements on the ground. Of course, we want security for both people. Of course, both people, civilians especially, women, children, older people, all of the people need security and must be secured. But when we speak about security, it must be remembered that there hasn't been a case in history where people, one side of the conflict could get full security and the other side of the conflict gets nothing. Security always happens when you achieve real peace, and it is achievable. But it is the first time in human history again where occupied people, oppressed people, are demanded to provide protection to their occupiers. And this version of reality is unacceptable. Our second point is that as Palestinian National Initiative, as a new movement, we believe we need a clear, unified strategy for the Palestinian people. And excuse me if I talk a little bit here about the internal Palestinian issue, and you ought to know about it. We need clear strategy, not only because we want to resolve the conflict and get peace, but also because we dream of a Palestine that is not only free, but also that is a good country where there is good governance, good rule of law, good separation of powers, good judiciary system, and good not only political democracy, but also social democracy, where there is social justice. For those who need it. And we are sick and tired of corruption, mismanagement, and bad behavior. It must end. And we think that the Palestinian people who have sacrificed so much and given so much deserve good leadership. And that's why we say we can achieve our goal. And we propose 5 pillars that should constitute the strategy for the future. The first one is mass, popular, non-violent struggle across the occupied territories. It is the best way for us, and we must consolidate that. You can criticize any form of struggle and sit in your office or condemn any form, but that would mean nothing to people unless you give them an alternative, and the alternative we are giving to them, which is mass, popular, non-violent struggle against the wall and against occupation. Second point, reconnecting with Palestinians everywhere. And I'm now talking to people here. I know that among you there are many Palestinians. I know that among you there are Palestinians from Lebanon. I know there are many Palestinians in the diaspora that feel betrayed, disconnected. I went to Lebanon and visited the refugee camps, and I saw people in Ain al-Hilwi and in other places who told me, we feel betrayed. They used us and they left us. It's time for Palestinians to get reunited again under one vision. It's time to reconnect, and it's time for this social fabric to get together one more time, because up till now we are struggling with less than 25 or 30% of our energy, and we need your energy. We need it a lot. And that's why one of the main goals of the Mubadara, the initiative, is to reconnect with Palestinians everywhere. But not only with Palestinians, and that takes me to the third point. We believe that the third pillar of the success of the Palestinian struggle is a powerful, strong international solidarity movement with the Palestinian people. And I want here to tell you that we feel so grateful to people like Rachel Corey and Thomas Harandl and the thousands others. The thousands of other people from ISM, from International Solidarity Movement, from Grassroots International Protection for Palestinians, to many of you who were with us. Rachel Corey died exactly there in Rafah. She was killed by the same bulldozer which was demolishing the houses when she was trying to prevent the demolishing of one house. And my God, what could be more nonviolent than this kind of action? Thomas Harandl was shot in the head by an Israeli sniper while he was trying to help a child cross the street so that he wouldn't be shot. We've managed to get to Palestine up till now no less than 7,500 people from all over the world. And through them, we recreated, we reinitiated the international solidarity movement with the Palestinian people. They came from all over the world, and they are changing now the opinion of the people in Europe, in every country in Europe, and also in the United States. When we went to The Hague, Israel brought 700 or 600 Israelis to demonstrate in front of the court. We did not need to bring more than 20 Palestinians, and we had a demonstration that was four times bigger than the Israeli demonstration, because people came from Holland, Denmark, Germany, France, Italy, from all over Europe, and even from the United States. There is a growth of solidarity movement, and it is admirable. And I ask you, please help us and be active. Come to Palestine if you can. Bring the information to the American public as much as you can. Organize solidarity activities with Palestinians as much as you can. Time has come to end this injustice. There comes a time in people's lives when they cannot take injustice anymore. And this time has come to Palestine. And the solidarity movement can be and should be a very important pillar of the success of our struggle, like was the case with South Africa at one point of time. The fourth pillar of our strategy is to help the steadfastness of the people, especially in the areas which are threatened by the wall and the checkpoints. We need to help people get medical care, health, education, help them maintain their agriculture, their income, have some kind of work, so that the wall will fail and eventually fall. And finally, we need to conduct a strong and serious internal reform in the Palestinian movement. And that all can be done by the power of the people, by organizing the people and the abilities and the energies of Palestinians. And this is why we have the Palestinian National Initiative. It's a movement for the future. And what encourages us a lot is the wonderful reaction, especially from two groups in the Palestinian society, the youth, the young, and the women who are joining this movement. 80% of the Palestinian people are below the age of 33, and it is quite encouraging to know that the youth is accepting this message. And our overall strategy, you and us, must be, we should reach that point where the cost and price of occupation will be much bigger than the benefits of occupation. And then things will change. But when we get to that point, as we did in 1989 and 88, we should not let the same dilemma happens again. We should not let something terrible like Oslo happen again. We must have a true resolution of the conflict, a true solution, a real discussion of all the serious problems and their resolution. And that is achievable, and that is possible. And finally, I want to say one thing to you all. Please understand, we might be suffering a lot. We might be having to sacrifice a lot. And I cannot describe to you the pains that people endure every day. Only yesterday, the Israeli army invaded Gaza and killed 14 people in one shot and injured 80. In 1 week, less than a week, they killed 27 people and injured more than 150. And it barely was mentioned in the press here. But regardless of all this suffering, one message I have for you that I brought with me, which is that nothing has ever broken us and nothing will break the Palestinian people. Thank you.
That was a talk by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's the secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative, or Mubadra, a recently established democratic opposition movement in the realm of Palestinian domestic politics. The Mubadra was co-founded with the late Professor Edward Said. The initiative calls for an end to the Israeli occupation, removal of illegal Israeli settlements, and a just solution to the rights of Palestinian refugees. You can find more information on Palestine and Dr. Mustafa Barghouti on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour tape or CD of A Challenge to Humanity by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order really helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.